Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
We are the Hammer and Nigel Show, filling in for Chad Benson tonight. Write down this phone number, 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423, Twitter, at Chad Benson Show. My name is Nigel, that is Jason Hammer sitting right across from me over there. Hello, sir.
Hopefully everyone had a fantastic Christmas weekend,
sure.
Holiday weekend, relaxing weekend, unless you're in charge of social media for Donald Trump. Dan Scavino, my God.
Is Dan Scavino got the worst job in the administration?
I mean, at the end of the day, you're in charge of telling your boss to not go onto Twitter so much. How's that working out for you so far? Just this past Friday, kickstarting holiday weekend, right? Everybody's got, you know, family on their mind, gifts and travel. Donald Trump goes on a Twitter tirade. What started at 11:37 a.m.? Tweets about the Israeli settlements.
Mm-hmm.
What followed? A lot of backlash about that. 11:50 goes on a nuclear arms tirade. A lot of backlash about that. And then following that, 5:26 p.m., then he puts out there a tweet about Lockheed Martin and Air Force One.
Oh, yeah. No, he's pitting Lockheed Martin and Boeing against each other.
Which always works out good for the consumer, right? When there's competition, there's got to be some sort of advantage for the consumer, you would think.
Well, he canceled Air Force One via Twitter. Just canceled it via Twitter
said,
a couple of weeks
ago. Out.
I think Trump needs to put down the Twitter. I think you're in the complete opposite camp.
I love it. Love every minute of it.
I don't think you can have your president, you know, tweeting out his scathing remarks about Alec Baldwin in Saturday Night Live. And you're right, Scavino probably got the worst job in the administration. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do, Dan. We want you to come be the social media director for the Trump administration.
Now, you're in charge of making sure he doesn't do anything dumb. Now, see, I'm the opposite. The more he's on Twitter, the better. Because the national media, the MSN, the mainstream media, sucks. And I know this sounds somewhat hypocritical, coming from a nationally syndicated radio show talking about how the MSN is awful. But the televised mainstream media is awful. And Donald Trump doesn't need that media. He's his own media, and that drives CNN crazy. That drives NBC crazy. It makes the head spin all the way around of the facts that he doesn't need them. He doesn't need their approval. He doesn't need to be buddies with them to make his own headlines, to make his own stories. That's why I dig when the Donald gets on Twitter, because I would rather get it directly from the source than from anything CNN has to offer.
I get that, Hammer, but when you have, you know, what was his tweet about the nuclear thing here? The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability until such time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes. Now that, by the way, I'm going to just be honest. I'm looking at that at a very basic level. Fine. The more nukes, the better, I say. The more weapons we have against the bad guys to deter any sort of action against the United States, I'm fine. I'm fine with spending money on the military. Build it back up, baby.
At the end of the day, if the nukes are going to be out there, do you want us to have them or do you want Syria to have one? I mean, I'll take it. Dibs. We'll totally take it.
Hammer, one of the Trump tweets yesterday, I was scrolling through in kind of a spotty area for my cell phone to get internet access. So I'm scrolling through, and Donald Trump is the only guy I want notifications whenever Trump tweets. That's the only guy. I hate Twitter. I hate social media, but I want to know when Trump tweets, and it's activated on my phone. So I'm scrolling through, and I see this, Donald Trump, Merry Christmas. And he tweeted a picture of him in front of a Christmas tree.
Sure.
So I scroll down below that tweet, it says, Happy Hanukkah. And he attached a picture to that, but it wasn't loading. And I was scared to death it was going to be Donald Trump in front of a menorah. You have one tweet where he's standing in front of a Christmas tree saying Merry Christmas, and I was scared to death that this picture said Happy Hanukkah was Donald Trump standing in front of a menorah smiling. But no,
he's doing
the
holiday car wash. He's going to stand in front of the Kwanzaa sign next with a festive hat on.
Luckily, it was just a picture of a menorah. Not him standing in front of it. So,
speaking of the Donald and Twitter, this past weekend, everybody got their panties in a wad because people thought that the Republican Party was comparing Donald Trump to the new king. Now, what happened was Reince Priebus and Sharon Day, they got together, they sent out a message, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm reading some of it. Over two millennia ago, a new hope was born into the world, a savior who would offer the promise of salvation to all mankind. They go on with this heartfelt Christmas message. But people took that the wrong way as they were comparing the Donald to the king.
Well, here it says, just as the three wise men did on that night, this Christmas heralds a time to celebrate the good news of a new king. That's what they're upset about. And quite frankly, I'm raising my eyebrows a little bit on that one.
Does it matter, though?
Let me read it again. Over two millennia ago, a new hope was born into the world, a savior who would offer the promise of salvation to all mankind. Just as the three wise men did on that night, this Christmas heralds a time to celebrate the good news of a new king. That was from the RNC chairman.
I didn't take that as Donald Trump, though. I took that as, hey, it's Christmas. You're celebrating the king. I didn't take it the way that everybody took it as. Does that make sense?
I totally think they were comparing Trump to the new king. I took that as, I'm raising my eyebrows a little bit on that one. And then, you know, of course, the tweets were coming in. Republican Party officially endorses a Christian divine right of kings, and I do not have enough whiskey for this. That was from Adam Weinstein. Who else? John Weaver. Dear RNC, we don't have a, quote, new king. What the hell is wrong with you people?
Good Lord. This country doesn't have a fake news problem. It has a panties in a wad problem. That is the biggest problem with America right now. Everyone's got a stick planted perpetually up their backside and their panties in a just perpetual wad. I mean, good Lord, what are we talking about? It's the holiday weekend, a tweet goes out, and the world shuts down. This is where we're at in society. And again, I love Donald Trump on Twitter. I don't want a damn thing to change. I don't want to be the person in charge of it. I don't want to be Dan Scavino. But I like the fact that the president now doesn't need the national media. So here's the deal. Feel free to hit us up on Twitter, at Hammer and Nigel. Get in the discussion. Did the tweet bother you, or is it just a case of panties in a wad?
Hey, let me pose you this. We got a couple minutes left here. Who had the tougher job? Who has the tougher job, Dan Scavino or Kellyanne Conway?
Oh, Dan.
Campaign manager.
Kellyanne's the Trump whisperer. She's fine. She's pulled miracles out of her backside before, and I love everything she's brought to the table. Dan, on the other hand, let's be honest, he's got his work cut out for him. He's going to wake up one morning at 6 in the morning, roll over in the middle of the night like most of us do, check the phone in the morning, and find out that your boss went on some sort of 3 a.m. Twitter tirade against Alec Baldwin and dropped, you know, some sort of derogatory term and misspelled things. He's got his work cut out for him. Kellyanne's fine. The hard part's over. He made Donald Trump likable.
But at that time, Kellyanne Conway had the toughest job in America. Was that making Trump look good and getting him elected?
She turned Donald Trump into the likable candidate. Think about that.
Well, what people don't understand, what people need to realize about Kellyanne Conway, it was all upside for her when she decided to take that job as campaign manager in August. It was all upside. Because if her candidate lost, she could have just been like, look, this is what I had to deal with. Look at what I had to deal with here.
Look what I had to work with here.
And then on the off chance that she pulls off the miracle upset, she's a genius. She's Queen Bee in that administration. It was all upside for her. She's a genius. I like her.
At the end of the day,
I vote for her.
When there are just two candidates left, and one of them is Donald Trump, and you can make him the likable one of the two, you've done something correct.
Well, I mean, just imagine that you know, when Trump's administration was trying to hire her for campaign manager, the guy, you know, she sits down with one of the Trump guys, and he's like, all right, look, here's what we're going to do. We want you to put Trump in the White House. I know, not that easy of a task, but, you know, and here's a few things. He's still going to tweet his own tweets. He's got this idea about banning Muslims.
There's a little video out there
there's a TMZ video out there.
We're
going to
do a dressed when we get to it.
Now, I know you're not like, I know you can't make miracles, but, you know, do what you can with that, okay? She had the tougher job at the time. Dan Scavino probably has the tougher job now.
And how much does that reek of Hillary Clinton, too? Despicable. You're so unliked that all these things we mentioned about Donald Trump played into his favor. People overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump compared to you. And this was a gentleman that got caught on video talking about grabbing someone by their hi-o.
Oh, careful there. Hammer, it's the Hammer and Nigel show. It's been a tumultuous 2016. George Michael, wonderful singer, just died yesterday, Christmas Day, of heart failure. We'll get into that. We'll get into the politically correct invading the world of rock and roll. This is the Hammer and Nigel show. We're filling in for Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
All right, you can hear a collective countrywide groan from all the Chad Benson fans. Hammer, this week we are the Hammer and Nigel Show filling in for Chad Benson. That groan is the disappointment they'll hear. They're getting us instead of Chad Benson this week.
It reminds me of the scene in the movie Major League where the construction workers are looking at the roster.
At the very beginning.
These guys don't look too blank and good.
This guy here is dead. Yeah, anyway, the Hammer and Nigel Show in for Chad. The phone number, 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423, at Chad Benson Show. Via Twitter, 2016 Hammer. You just heard the guy of the song from George Michael coming in. George Michael rose to fame. Remember the 80s pop duo Wham? Sold 100 million albums in a music career spanning four decades. Died at his home yesterday at the young age of 53. Heart failure.
And people can make fun of Wham, you know, and people have done it. There's memes going around. They weren't the most masculine group of dudes, but that 1985 show they did in Beijing, the first Western pop act to perform in Beijing, that bad boy was a monster. That was a monster, and George Michael is one of those guys where you might not be the biggest fan of the way he lived his life. You might not be a big fan of him in general, but when you start listing all the songs between Wham and a solo career and what he meant to pop culture, this guy's going to go down as one of the all-time greats. And I don't mean that just because we're on the air and it's hyperbole. Let's go back to a time in America where censorship was big. And Nigel, you and I are big into freedom of speech,
sure,
freedom of expression. When the George Michael video, I Want Your Sex, came out, remember all the backlash, all the hell breaking loose. MTV had to put disclaimers on it.
Yeah.
Tipper Gore wanted it banned. It was a crazy time. He was a groundbreaking performer in terms of getting expression out there.
God, I remember watching. I was, let's see, Faith came out. His first solo album, Faith, came out, I think, in 87. And that was the album with I Want Your Sex on it. And I remember I was, 10? I was 11 years old in 1987. Every time that song, I was a huge MTV watcher. And every time that video would come on, I'd hear my mom yell out from the kitchen, "Change it! Change the channel! No sex!"
How old were you about this point?
Faith came out, I think I was 11 years old.
Okay.
His first album, Faith, was kind of quote-unquote sexy, sexed up. Even Faith has, you know those kinds of suggestive lyrics. His next album I really, really liked. It was released in 90. Listen Without Prejudice, Volume 1, was a more serious in tone, had many more serious messages on there than Faith and I Want Your Sex.
And I mentioned over the weekend, Nige, I'm a 39-year-old grown man, two kids, beer-drinking alpha male, and Last Christmas is still my favorite Christmas song of all time. Stop laughing, you insensitive a-hole.
Last Christmas is your favorite Christmas song? Is that what you're telling me?
It is, by far. And it's not even close.
I had 2016 has been brutal, especially in the realm of music. I do have a list. I can't mention every loss, but 2016 has taken a lot. David Bowie. Let's start with David Bowie in January, 69 years old. Alan Rickman. The great actor Alan Rickman. I'm sure you watched a few of his movies over the weekend, right?
I watched Die Hard a number of times over the weekend.
The bad guy in Die Hard.
It's not Christmas until Hans Gruber falls off the top of the Nakatomi Plaza.
Who else? Glenn Frey, from the co-founder of the Eagles, died, and then Abe Vigoda rounding out January in 94. There were several times, every year we thought Abe Vigoda died, and he was still alive. And then in February, Antonin Scalia, very influential conservative and productive member of the U.S. Supreme Court.
It's going to be a big year in replacement for that gentleman.
Boutros-Ghali. You know, I had to look up, you know, the only reason why I knew, and I'll admit this right now on a national radio show, the only reason I know who Boutros-Ghali is because of Seinfeld.
Boutros-Ghali.
That's when George's girlfriend took off her top and
Boutros.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Boutros-Ghali.
Nancy Reagan and Gary Shandling in March.
Oh, man.
The Larry Sanders Show. Good God. One of the funniest of all time, and it started like a whole new genre with Larry Sanders. That was the first of its kind.
Yeah, but I still watch it when it's on. If you scroll through the HBO channels and the HBO comedy or classic or whatever it's known as, they show a lot of Larry Sanders shows now. I will still watch that and laugh.
In April, it was Prince.
Oh, that one hurt.
That one's a big one. Then Merle Haggard and China. Remember China the wrestler? She died in April. Joni Lauer,
a.k.a. China.
In May, it was Morley Safer from 60 Minutes. Muhammad Ali, Kimbo Slice, Pat Summitt. I've got to go to another page here. I'm not done yet. We're only in August. Gene Wilder.
That one hurt, too. Gene Wilder did some amazing comedies. Yeah,
the most underrated Gene Wilder comedy of all time, The Woman in Red with Kelly LeBrock. Beautiful, beautiful, hilarious movie. Arnold Palmer, Janet Reno, Florence Henderson, Fidel Castro.
And we're going to talk about Fidel Castro this week because for whatever reason, when he died, the media treated it like the Pope had passed away.
December, this month has been especially brutal. Alan Thicke, John Glenn, Craig Sager, the longtime NBA sideline reporter, Zsa Zsa Gabor at 99, Henry Heimlich. Guy had an ego on him. He named his own life-saving maneuver after himself. And then George Michael, rest in peace. It is the Hammer and Nigel Show. In for Chad Benson. Back in a minute.
The Chad Benson Show. Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
The Hammer and Nigel Show, filling in for Chad Benson. Phone number 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. Twitter handle at Chad Benson Show. Or you can tweet at us at Hammer and Nigel. My name is Nigel. That's Jason Hammer sitting right over there.
We were just talking about some of the folks that passed away in 2016.
Yeah.
It was a who's who of 80s pop stars, man. If you were an 80s pop star, Prince, David Bowie, Glenn Frey, and now George Michael, bad year. I mean, hell, if you're Billy Idol, don't leave the house. If you're Bruce Springsteen, just stay somewhere safe.
Madonna, get in the basement. Don't come out.
She can come out. It's fine. Hammer and Nigel, tweet at us, at Hammer and Nigel. Let me ask you a question, Nigel. You're more of a rock guy than I am. I'm more of an old school, filthy hip-hop kind of guy.
Yeah.
You're the rock guy. Would you consider Metallica an 80s band or a 90s band?
That's a good one, man. The Black Album from Metallica came out in 91, and that was their breakthrough. That was their huge monster hit. They toured on that album for years.
But they were on that Hairbangers Ball stuff,
no,
right?
I mean, Metallica were huge in the 80s, too. The late 80s, Master of Puppets. And I would consider them both. 90s bands and the 2000s. I mean, they're still huge. They're one of the world's biggest rock bands.
The fact that they're still around and still making music and still touring with the way America is today, where everybody's so offended by everything, they're still making hard, kick-ass music, right?
Yeah. In fact, Hardwired to Self-Destruct is their new album. I'm really disappointed. I had that on my Amazon wish list, and nobody got it for me.
Nobody.
You know, my mom, I'm like, Mom, you don't need to give me any Christmas presents. No, 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 I want to get you something. I wanted Hardwired to Self-Destruct, the new Metallica album.
She got you Nickelback instead, didn't she?
We'll talk about that. James Hetfield, the PC culture has invaded Metallica. And it's not Metallica's fault. It's the people of San Francisco's fault. James Hetfield is the lead singer of Metallica, was on Joe Rogan's podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think this is actually last week. And as me, as a Metallica fan, I'm just salivating over this. Love it. I love listening to Rogan's podcast. But James Hetfield, like, grew up, Metallica's from San Francisco, native son of San Francisco Bay Area. James Hetfield had to move because of the PC culture, the elitist attitude.
Kind of got sick of the Bay Area, the attitudes of people there. You know, they talk about how diverse they are and things like that. And, you know, it's fine if you're diverse like them. Showing up with a deer on the bumper doesn't fly in Marin County, you know. My form of eating organic doesn't vibe with theirs, you know. I felt that there was an elitist attitude there, that if you weren't their way politically, their way environmentally, all of that, that, you know, you were looked down upon.
So even James Hetfield, the lead singer, one of the world's biggest, most masculine rock bands, he was affected by the PC culture out there in the Bay Area. Now, he's a really down-to-earth guy.
He is, but isn't that the complete opposite of what rock and roll is supposed to stand for?
What, do you think he should have stayed and, like, flipped his neighbors off? And,
yes!
And
that's what someone with an album titled Master of Puppets is supposed to do. You put the deer carcass in your front lawn, you crank up some loud, obnoxious music.
But James Hetfield is in his 50s now, and he's got a family. They moved to Vail, Colorado, which actually isn't exactly a safe space for counter-PC culture, I don't think.
It's like having a gambling problem and moving from Las Vegas to Atlantic City.
But James, he was talking about, you know, he hunts. He's a hunter. He's a gatherer. He's got his own ranch, kills his own cattle, eats his own meat. And, yeah, people in the Bay Area didn't like that, so he up and moved.
You know me. I'm a big proponent of there comes a point in time where you just get too old for certain things. If you're too old to fight authority, maybe rock and roll isn't your game anymore. And I look at you because when we play Metallica music in studio, whether it's bumper music you hear on the show or when we leave and you've got your iPod, you crank it up, you're still a grown man that does like that headbanging thing.
Oh, yeah.
You bite your upper lip and you headbang.
There we go. That's right, Phil, back our producer.
Look at you. You're a father.
My headphones just flew off. So what are you saying? I'm too old to go to a concert and headbang and rock out for 2 hours?
Yes. There comes
That's
a
ridiculous.
Point in time,
you are ridiculous. I don't understand your logic here.
There comes a point in time where society dictates what you can and can't do anymore. You're a grown man. You're a father of two boys. You're too old to be going to the club. You're too old to be taking part of a floor rush if you're at a college basketball game. You're too old for drinking games, and you're way too damn old to be headbanging in public and biting your lip.
That's just nonsense. You're talking nonsense.
Jeez, you might as well just die.
What's that?
I said, geez, you might as well just die.
No kidding. Thank you, Phil.
I'm the only responsible one on this show tonight.
I can go to a Metallica show at 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, and jam out for 2 hours, come home with a sore neck, wake up the next morning hungover and sore. There is absolutely nothing wrong with it. I wouldn't get in a mosh pit. I've never been mosh pit guy.
You're making my case for me. If you have to have recovery from a concert, you're too old to be at said concert.
James Hetfield had to have neck surgery because of this issue.
So did Peyton Manning, and he retired. Peyton Manning got out the league a few years later because he knew his time was up.
Okay. All right. So, anyway, you can check out that James Hetfield interview on Joe Rogan's podcast. I thought that was really interesting, and how he got ran out of San Francisco because of the elitist ad. I wouldn't want to be around it either. He's a dude that's got kids. He's got a wife. And, you know, like he said, you pull in your own driveway with a deer strapped to the front of your hood, people in Marin County might raise an eyebrow or two at you. I can understand that. And going out to Colorado to live on the ranch where it's kind of isolated.
What's a little disappointing, though, is you mentioned he was like native son, right? He lived there his whole life. Because normally when that's the case, if there's a crazy person that lives in your neighborhood, you would just simply, you know, bypass that person and say, oh, that's the crazy person's house. Don't worry about it. But it's James Hatfield. He's famous. He's got money. You think he would fit right in. But no, we don't want your money because your money comes with deer blood on it.
Speaking of California, Hammer, there's a story out of Solano County. Is that how you pronounce it? Solano County?
October?
this guy, Joseph Schwab, was charged with a misdemeanor driving under the influence of a drug. But here's the thing. That drug? Caffeine.
Caffeine. He got pulled over for caffeine.
This, according to defense attorney Stacy Barrett, almost 18 months later after being pulled over, Schwab is preparing to go to trial. The only evidence the DA has provided of his intoxication is a blood test showing the presence of caffeine. He was driving home from work. He was pulled over by an agent, California Department of Alcohol Beverage Control. He was driving an unmarked vehicle. The agent said Schwab had cut her off and was driving erratically. Took her to jail. Breathalyzer test showed 0.0 blood alcohol level. Toxicology report came back negative for any drugs. This is enough. This is getting ridiculous. People, the lawyer's saying, I've never seen this before. Let's see here. Barrett has filed a motion for the case to be dismissed. Charges were not brought until June of this month, nearly 10 months after the incident. So nearly 10 months after the incident, after not finding anything in this guy's blood, they finally charged him. It's going to a jury January 11th.
What do they charge him with?
Driving under the influence.
Look, if caffeine is a drug, then consider me El Chapo because I'm drinking a Red Bull and I've got a Diet Mountain Dew in the fridge right now.
Let's see. There's a forensic psychologist saying, quote, it's really stupid. If that's the case, they better come to arrest me. So they've got all sorts of experts, all sorts of lawyers on this. There's a lawyer that's saying making the case with caffeine would be difficult because the prosecutor would have to show the impaired driving was specifically caused by the caffeine and not any other circumstances. The prosecutors need to be fired for this. This is ridiculous.
I once chugged 2 liters of Mountain Dew before getting behind the wheel once. Hell, based with these prosecutors and this crew, they would have thought I was Randy Travis. Driving back and forth all different directions.
So that's going on in California right there. Quote, nobody believed me. I only had caffeine in my system until I showed them the lab results. I want the charges to be dismissed and my name to be cleared. That was the guy that got arrested, this Joe Schwab guy. So
Joe Schwab, I got your back. That's a Red Bull salute right there. I'm banging it on the table for you, Joe. I got your back, Jack.
Coming up next, Hammer, you'll love this one. Drexel Professor. Once white genocide?
Why would I love that? Why is that a tease? Why would I love white genocide?
You're going to love it because this guy is an idiot. This is out of Philly. This professor in Drexel tweeted something yesterday that was outrageous, ridiculous. Even the university said it was reprehensible. And I'll tell you exactly what he tweeted. That's next. The Hammer and Nigel Show, filling in for Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
Yeah, I was at a Metallica show once, and they were playing this song, Battery. And they had to stop the show because somebody threw a battery at James Hetfield.
Well, of course they did. It's the name of the song.
No. You don't throw batteries at James Hetfield. They stopped the show, and they were about ready to walk off. James Hetfield said, if you do this one more time, I will walk off this stage. The show is over. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show, filling in for Chad Benson.
That's ridiculous. If you name a song Tomatoes, you can't be shocked when somebody chucks a tomato at your face.
That's the dumbest logic I've ever heard. Shut up. 844-DIG-CHAD. 844-344-2423 at Chad Benson Show. We are the Hammer and Nigel Show. I'm Nigel. That's Hammer over there. And we had this discussion all night long.
There comes a point in time where you're just too old for certain things. You look ridiculous.
How much, Hammer, do you happen to know how much tuition is at Drexel University in Philly?
The cost of attendance for incoming first-year students at Drexel this past year was just over $44,000.
This is from FoxNews.com. A professor from Drexel University in Philly in hot water after professing on Twitter that all he wanted for Christmas was white genocide.
Oh, that's it? That's all?
The school, this is so funny because the school had to issue a statement on Christmas Day about this moron. This guy's name's George Cicerillo Marr. I probably screwed that up. I'll just call him Professor George.
Professor George.
He's an associate professor of politics and global studies. He tweeted this on his account, quote, "All I want for Christmas is white genocide."
That's it. That's all he wants.
Oh, this man is obviously a rational human being. He kind of, I saw a picture of this dude. He reminded me of that. You remember that scene in Forrest Gump where Jenny, they're at the Black Panther party, and yeah. Jenny's boyfriend hits her? He looks like the guy that hit Jenny.
Oh, that guy, that lion bastard Johnson guy. That guy.
I thought it kind of reminded me of this guy. Sorry, I ruined your Black Panther party. Anyway, here's the statement Drexel had to release because of this idiot. While the university recognizes the right of its faculty to freely express their thoughts and opinions in public debate, Professor George's comments are utterly reprehensible, deeply disturbing, and do not in any way reflect the values of the university. The university is taking this situation very seriously. So to their credit, the university's credit, they're like, yeah, that's reprehensible.
Right, and we were kind of joking earlier that Dan Scavino of the Trump team has got his work cut out for him as a social media correspondent. How would you like to be the guy at Drexel that has to wake up on Christmas and handle this situation?
He's opening his presents, probably got a pair of loafers or something. Oh, honey, thank you. And he gets a call from the dean. Okay, so since the tweet went viral, he made his Twitter feed private, so those tweets are no longer visible.
That is gutless. If you're going to be an idiot, own it. If you're going to have one of those opinions that's going to, you know, divide people or kind of be out there on an island, don't protect your account. Be a man and own it. That's garbage.
He is kind of owning it, though. This Drexel University professor did release a statement. Here's what he had to say, and he's not backing down. He's not exactly apologetic or sorry for the tweet. God, Twitter just gets you in so much trouble, no matter who you are or what you do. Anyway, here's the statement. On Christmas Eve, I sent a satirical tweet.
Bullcrap! Excuse me.
About an imaginary concept, white genocide. For those who haven't bothered to do their research, white genocide is an idea invented by white supremacists and used to denounce everything from interracial relationships to multicultural policies. He also went on to say that Drexler's statement that they released on Christmas Day was, quote, chilling.
Really? His statement was but the school's response was chilling.
Yeah, he's doubling down on this. Quote, while upholding my right to free expression, the statement refers to my satirical tweets as utterly reprehensible. On the university level, moreover, this statement, despite a tepid defense of free speech, sends a chilling message and sets a frightening precedent and exposes unintended blah, 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 blah.
Look, you can tell me he's trying to own this all you want, and that statement's one thing, but if you want to be a man's man, if you want to be Billy Badass, that's fine, but you need to unprotect your account then. Own everything and put it out there.
I think he was getting death threats. That's probably one reason why he went to private.
So he can put death threats out there, but he can't take the ones coming back in? Is that how it's working now?
He didn't put any death threats out there.
Genocide is not a death threat? Really?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, just imagine the reaction to, like, if a professor from Drexel, like, people are defending this guy. Right to free speech, right to free. Imagine if a professor tweeted out that he voted for Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
Racist, bigot, you need to be fired.
Imagine if he wrote a black genocide. Imagine that hellfire and brimstone that would take place after that.
As well, there should be.
And this is happening all over the country, though. This is just one example. This guy just got caught. The media picked up on this story from Drexel. This happens at all major colleges around the country. As parents, you're paying $44,000 a year to send your son or daughter to an institution.
Good God.
Where they're being taught by Jenny's boyfriend from Forrest Gump, and he's making genocide, quote, satirical jokes. I mean, really? I mean, at what point do parents just stop sending your kids to college? Other thing is you're going to have to do to make sure your child gets educated enough so you're not around idiots like this guy. And again, it's everywhere. It's not just here.
You were a graduate of Ball State University.
Yes, sir.
Up in Muncie, Indiana, are you not?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever have anything like this that wasn't as prevalent probably in the mid-90s?
It wasn't as prevalent back then, or maybe I was just too drunk to notice it. But I never really felt like my professor was preaching at me or forcing views on me. Now, thanks to social media, everybody's got a Vine. Everybody's got a YouTube video of a professor talking about how 9/11 is an inside job, or Sandy Hook never happened, or some ridiculous crap. The technology is out there now, which is a good thing, I think, because now you can hold idiots like this guy accountable.
Well, yeah, there was somebody, I forget which university it was, that was big news a couple months ago, that they said, if you voted for Trump, stand up right now. They were in the classroom. The professor was like, I want to know who voted for Trump. Please stand up right now so people can see what you look like, blah, 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 that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And nobody stood up, of course.
And this is what happens when the younger generation starts becoming professors at these universities.
Yeah.
And all right. It's a mess, man. It's a mess.
Big thanks for Chad Benson for letting us fill in for him this week. We are the Hammer and Nigel Show. Tweet at us. Get in on the fun. At Hammer and Nigel. We'll be back.
The Chad Benson Show.